podcasting from an underground studio flying under the radar, this is Dan. By day, I'm a professor of cognitive neuroscience, and by night, I retreat into my subterranean lair and dig deep into the thoughts of mankind.
And I'm Dave, sitting firmly atop the Great Canadian Shield in Northern Ontario. I'm a pastor by profession, and a part of that includes unmasking the messaging that comes at us each and every day.
We will not conform.
You're listening to the Not Conformed Podcast.
Well, we welcome our listeners to the introductory episode of the Not Conformed Podcast. Dave, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. We got a pile of snow here, and I don't know
you guys
if you're
skiing?
Getting dumped on over there too. Yep, we've been out, and I'm nice and sore from yesterday. So
yeah, the boys have been snowmobiling, and the other kids have been sledding and skating. So lots of winter activities going on here in Ontario. Just so that our listeners know, Dave and I are separated by over 500 kilometers of the Great Canadian landscape, much of it the Great Canadian Shield, and we're connected over the internet, recording live as we do these podcasts. And in this episode, we just want to give the listeners a little bit of an introduction to our podcast, what this podcast will be about, and what sorts of things we'll be covering. So, Dave, what is the focus of the Not Conformed Podcast?
Well, we've got 4 points here that we want to talk about. Why don't you launch us in with the first one.
First kind
of premise there.
Okay, yeah, we got basically 4 key premises. So the first premise is that people generate and work from a general view of the world. So the idea here is that they hold beliefs about what is true and what is false. They have understandings about how things work in the world, and they have narratives about world history and sociocultural events.
Yeah, and so, you know, in some cases, this might be something that they explicitly and deliberately generate or formulate for themselves. But in other cases, it might be kind of more implicit and unanalyzed.
Yeah, it turns out that in some cases, people's views aren't always fully coherent. There's pockets of incoherence, beliefs that maybe conflict with each other, and some beliefs that are incomplete and fragmented at times. But all that together forms are what we would call the concept of the worldview.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes we call these, sometimes in theology we talk about felicitous inconsistencies.
The
important thing is to also realize that these worldviews are important in thinking about how sometimes you can't go to a whole bunch of data to make a decision, but you're going to use your worldview to inform your decisions.
To almost fill in the gaps, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't you read the way Merriam-Webster defines the world, the concept of worldview?
Yeah, so according to the dictionary, worldview is defined as a comprehensive conception or apprehension of the world, especially from a specific standpoint. So it implies that you have some assumptions that you're working from, and you're using those assumptions to essentially analyze the information that's around you. And I think this brings us to the second premise of our podcast, which
is... Yeah, I kind of stepped into this one just a minute ago.
That's okay. But this basic second premise is that our worldviews are important because they guide, to some extent, our decisions and our actions in the world.
Example. If you believe that human carbon emissions are going to make the world burn up within a few years, as you know, been popularized recently by some interesting quotes on mainstream media, you're going to eagerly submit to a carbon tax. You're going to be pro that whole agenda of alternate energy, and regardless of what it costs,
tax me.
That's right.
Yeah, but I guess if you think that this anthropogenic global warming is bogus, then we might put on our yellow vests and protest in the streets of France, right, with the other folks that are protesting there. I think that started out, by the way, in France as a protest against
gas
the carbon
tax.
It
was an increase in gas prices, which traces back to this whole thing.
Gas taxing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the second point was that these worldviews guide our actions and decisions. The third premise here is that there are multiple contrasting worldviews that have been carefully formulated and advanced in the past and which are now, in some form or another, vying for our acceptance.
Exactly. And what we want to do in this podcast is to show you how the shaping of our worldviews is done by media outlets, the entertainment industry, public education, government bodies, and yes, even we'll talk about intelligence agencies.
And maybe I can add to that list also, Dave, the scientific community, the scientific establishment. You know, we always think a scientist is somehow being dispassionate and neutral, but being a scientist myself, I know that's actually very far from the truth.
Yeah, good point.
So, and this brings us then to the fourth premise of this podcast, which is, and I think this one actually might be the hardest one to accept by some of our listeners. And the premise is that there are deliberate forces, sometimes in the open, others operating behind the scenes, that cunningly shape and manipulate and guide our worldviews.
Yeah, and we're not, we recognize that this these claims might be hard to swallow, and we're certainly not saying that you have to accept these premises on the outset. Part of our podcast is to chronicle our journey as we look into the materials that have sort of unpacked this for us and to bring you along on the journey so you can see. And don't take it, you know, we're going to look at some primary sources on others who have demonstrated this and maybe even some examples from current media where this has happened so that you can see for yourself how this plays out.
Perhaps I can offer a quote here from Edward Bernays, who wrote in the 1920s and is known as the father of public relations. And we're going to spend more time on Edward Bernays in the next few episodes to come. But he writes the following thing, and it's shocking. Listen carefully. He writes, "The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is a true ruling power of our country." And then later on, he adds, "It remains a fact that in almost every act of our daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct, or in our ethical thinking, we are dominated by a relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind, who harness old social forces and contrive new ways to bind and guide the world." End quote.
Nice.
That might be shocking to some, but here's the guy, very well respected, the father of public relations in America, who is basically characterizing this manipulation of people's worldviews by a small elite group of people. Okay. And again, this might be hard to for some to believe, but over the course of the podcast, we're gonna unpack this. Dave, what do you think? Are people thinking, oh my goodness, these guys are just another bunch of conspiracy theorists?
Yeah, that's fine. It doesn't, that may be the case, but what we're hoping to do is actually give people direct access to some of the foundational works, like what you just mentioned with Bernays and others, Chomsky and Jacques Ellul, that actually pointed to this stuff quite some time ago. And we want to look a little bit back further into the historical stuff, events that are now either declassified or are fairly well-known things that have taken place, so that we're not just dealing with the controversial new stuff, which people sort of divide on and take sides. But we're going to show you how this has been happening over time with examples that won't be as controversial to us now, having a perspective of 50 years later. And look at some of those kind of foundational works, I would say primary sources, but they're not really primary. What we hope to show you is not so much what you got to think about the world, but that you have to think a little harder about the way the world is based on from what you think that you know the world is.
Yeah, and the more exposed you are to other people's thoughts, or at least the people's thoughts who shape the current way of thinking, the more better able you're able to assess your own worldviews and other people's worldviews. So yes, we want to definitely give people access to some of these foundational works, and we'll quote things directly, just like we did here of Edward Bernays. But in addition to that, I think what we want to do is analyze the different competing worldviews that are out there.
Yeah, the first step really is understanding that there is such a thing as a worldview and that you hold it and that it has certain biases and certain presuppositions that you hold. And then the other one is understanding what other people's worldviews are all about.
Yeah.
Right?
And, yeah, exactly. What are the alternatives?
And we want to look at how certain worldviews are propagated by the media. Through movies, news outlets, even the educational system or political leaders, all that kind of stuff, to shape your worldview.
Yeah, and I'm very interested, Dave, because you follow some movies and shows that you know are directly messaging and targeting young people. And so we'll hopefully get into analyses of some of the messages that are being pushed through those various movies and TV shows. And I think both of us have some knowledge about the education system. I have several kids in high school right now in the public education system, and we both follow the politics. And I guess what you can also interject in here, and I hope we spend some time on that, is some of your theological perspective as well.
Yeah, definitely. We should make it clear that we're operating from a Christian worldview, and we're not going to hide anything about that.
Yes, but, absolutely. Yeah.
Hopefully, that won't, you know, that even if you're not coming from that worldview, what we want to discuss is worldviews in general and the assumptions behind them. So we're not, this isn't going to be necessarily a podcast that is, hopefully, it's not one sided. Hopefully, we can discuss both sides of the issue.
Yeah. Maybe even sometimes we can critique some trends in the current Christian worldview. And relate them and contrast them with historical Christian perspectives as well. But it's obvious that nobody can actually assess worldviews in a completely neutral way, right? Everybody is going to be coming at it from some perspective, and we just want to be clear from the outset what our perspective is, and we're working from the Christian Protestant worldview. Yeah, so I think that's a good overview, Dave, about where we want to go with this podcast, but before we conclude this very brief opening episode, I want to take a moment just to do a quick deconstruction of a recent study, scientific study that came out, which was featured by The Guardian. And this might give folks a bit of an example of the kind of thinking that we might and the kind of issues we might deal with. And let me just quote from this Guardian article here, because they sort of summarize the study quite well. And I have the study printed out here beside me. Here's what The Guardian says. European colonization of the Americas resulted in the killing of so many native people that it transformed the environment and caused the Earth's climate to cool down, new research has found. Settlers killed off huge numbers of people in conflicts and also by spreading disease, which reduced the indigenous population by 90% in the century following Christopher Columbus's initial journey to the Americas and Caribbean in 1492. This large-scale depopulation, and that's in quotes, resulted in vast tracts of agricultural land being left untended, researchers say, allowing the land to become overgrown with trees and other new vegetation. The regrowth soaked up enough carbon dioxide from the atmosphere to actually cool the planet, with the average temperature dropping by 0.15 Celsius in the late 1500s and early 1600s. The study by scientists at University College London found. So that's the summary. Basically, the study, and the study was published in the Quaternary Science Reviews, and I actually never heard of this journal before, but I looked it up. It's an Elsevier journal. Its five-year impact factor is 5.05, which is actually quite high. So this is a widely read and cited journal. Just to give you a point of comparison, most psychology journals will have an impact factor under 4, except for the very elite ones. But this one has an impact factor of 5.5, and higher numbers are better, by the way. So this is, what I'm saying is, this is a journal that is read and it has impact. And the basic argument here is that white Europeans came to the Americas, killed off a bunch of people, which allowed forests to regrow in previously agricultural areas, that sucked up carbon dioxide, and that led to a temperature drop. Now, let's think about this for a second, because this is like, hey, this is science. This is, you know, we know this. And by the way, this is University College London, right? Which is an elite institution. So the question that one has to ask themselves when you're faced with messaging like this is, first of all, how did they arrive at some of the estimates they arrived at? So for instance, how would they have arrived at an accurate estimation of population size during the 1500s of the Americas? How did they arrive at an accurate indication of land use during that time? How did they arrive at an accurate estimation of carbon concentrations and sinks? Like, I mean, you have to have good measures to be able to model all those things to ultimately draw a link between human activity and temperature change. And of course, they spend actually a lot of time in their paper trying to unpack where they get these estimates from. And it, you know, it sounds very scholarly, but in the end, it's based on a whole lot of assumptions. And in fact, being overly exhaustive in their review, they're using, it's actually a rhetorical tactic, because the reader basically says, oh, well, they look at all this literature. I mean, it must be right. And they just kind of give up thinking about it and they just accept it. But there's a lot of uncertainty in those estimates, a lot of speculation, because of course, nobody was there in the current time to be able to take very accurate measurements of all these things. So there's a lot of things to be skeptical about here.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is the messaging that comes through that paper. That's the stuff that I'm interested in. And we want to talk about, in future episodes, we want to talk about, first of all, what kind of questions you need to ask to of these kinds of things. And then the other question is what's the messaging? What do people take away from this, both the explicit kind of messaging, the obvious stuff, but what is there any implied messages that are picking up? And what I find interesting is when you see the same implied message coming in through multiple sources, you have a message that comes through the movies and it sort of repeats itself in various movies. And you have a message that if that same message is being picked up by the media and then also being sort of propagated through this channel, then you start to think about, well, what's the impact of this implied message and why is it out there?
Yeah. And absolutely. And I think in the next episode, we might talk about how this coordination might actually occur, right? And there's there's dynamics that come into play that lead to some of this coordination where you have the same message being pushed through many different types of media and different kinds of outlets. But here is, since you asked, Dave, here are the takeaway messages from this article. The first one is obviously a focus on the white European killing people and causing something bad, which is climate change, right? So the basic messaging there is that white man is bad. And that is consistent with what you hear these days about white privilege and so on. Mm-hmm. The second related message has to do with the anthropogenic or man-made climate change. And up to this point, that theory had a bit of a problem because it could only account for climate change after the Industrial Revolution, right? Because people weren't generating carbon at a high enough level because there was no industry before the Industrial Revolution. But now what they're saying is, look, there's further evidence that people can change the climate even before the Industrial Revolution. So they're strengthening the link between human activity and climate change, and they're turning back the clock and saying that occurred even before the Industrial Revolution.
That's kind of convenient, since the hockey stick curve has been debunked and shown to be based on some faulty analyses and data. So,
yeah, and actually, it was some Canadians kind of thing, who debunked that, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
But so okay, all of that, right, is enough to be thinking about. But then there's a third message that I think people will often miss. And the third implied message that I worry is being disseminated out there is that the global temperatures can be reduced with a population reduction.
Yeah. And we are seeing this message being peddled all over the place. There's a whole bunch of movies that peddle this idea of the need for global reduction, or just the idea that mankind is a kind of a virus on the planet or a scourge.
Yeah, that's scourge.
It needs to be purged, and the planet's going to rise up and, you know, get rid of this this virus. And it's all over the place. And you even see elites like Bill Gates and others peddling the idea of a necessary global reduction in population. They're not talking about just a little bit holding things steady. They're talking about drastic reductions. It's very misanthropic, this idea. Except we're being bombarded with it all over the place. There's even, I remember hearing a clip from a girl who talked about not having a baby because of, you know, she didn't want to have any children because of climate change.
Yes.
They increase the carbon footprint. And so to save the planet, we have to have less children.
Yeah. And it's interesting, especially that this population reduction, right, the mode of it, is identified as conflict, people in conflict, and the spreading of disease. So basically war and disease. There's just an example, really, of the kind of messaging that you get just in this Guardian article that's citing a scientific article, and you think to yourself, wait a minute, but science is just dispassionate. They're just giving you the evidence. Well, unfortunately, out there are scientists who I would call scientific activists. They're out there basically with a particular worldview in mind, and they want to use science as a platform to propagate their worldview, but also they want to subjugate science to support their worldview. I think a lot of that is going out there, and that's why it's very important to be very thoughtful about all the information that you get. You can't just trust because a scientist said this that therefore this is on some strong ground, or this makes sense, or you ought to conform your worldview to whatever they say.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Dan. And although we're not waging a crusade against science, we certainly don't want to fall into that dichotomy of faith versus science. We want to help you examine worldviews and how they conform your thought if you're not aware of what's going on.
Yeah, and I am a scientist, so I would, you know, I think there's great value in science, but science can also be co-opted and misused. And so, yes, we have to be aware of that. And I think what we're going to see, too, is, Dave, maybe you'll talk about in later episodes, how there's this commingling now between science and magic in the media. And there's some very fascinating topics we're going to get into in future episodes.
Yeah, that's one of my pet ones that I've been kind of following through for the last few years.
Okay, very good. So, Dave, anything else you think we want to mention in this introductory episode, episode zero?
Well, I wanted to mention, I hope that people can, I hope you follow along. We're new to this podcasting thing, and we're not broadcasters. We don't have any broadcast history. And we're going to work on cleaning up our ums and hums and all those kinds of things that make for annoying listening. So bear with us as we have a learning curve as we go through this. If you hear any bangs or cracks or anything like that, it's probably coming from my end. Dan's got the higher end studio there, and he's got the board and processing all this stuff and editing it up. I'm just working with Yeti Blue here, and probably got to put it on a shock mount at some point so that my banging on my desk isn't going to annoy everybody. But we're learning, and we hope that despite those things, you find some value in this podcast and join us on this journey of kind of unpacking and revealing these worldviews.
Yeah. So I think with that, we're going to leave it there. And
you know what? Before we close, yeah. I got one more thing here.
Yeah.
We got to do an unboxing here.
Oh, you got? I hear some paper in the background.
Yeah, I'm gonna. It's not an unboxing. It's we're not doing audio video here. So it's just audio. It's an Amazon package.
Ooh.
I'm gonna.
Oh, it sounds great.
All
oh,
right.
I love that sound.
Is that good audio for unboxing?
Oh, it is. Yeah.
All right. So here, I'll just. A little bit more for you.
You're redlining here. It's so wonderful.
Okay. So what I got here is Jacques Ellul's The Technological Society. I ordered it on Amazon. We'll be getting into LUL's book Propaganda, The Formatting of Men, The Formation of Men's Attitudes.
I got that one right here.
Yeah, it says he's the author of The Technological Society. So I actually bought it. I ordered it up on Amazon at some point. Maybe we'll dig into this as well. So it's a bit of a teaser, but
LUL was a Christian apparently.
Yeah, he's got another. He's got a ton of books actually. Very prolific. Not all of them have been translated into English. Maybe that's a good cause to. But he's got the Presence of the Kingdom. He's got the Christianity, Anarchy and Christianity, the Subversion of Christianity. Mm. They're you got to order them from Amazon. Basically, there's no Kindle or anything like that. It's all paper. So that's just a teaser for the future. We'll be looking at this stuff and I'm ordering more to keep us fueled.
All right. Well, we invite our listeners to join us for episode one when it comes out, and we're going to be dealing with Noam Chomsky and the propaganda model of media. So it's going to be very exciting. We have some clips for you and some very interesting quotes, some analysis, and a lot of fun. But for now, Dave, I'm going to say over and out.
All right, sounds good. See you on the next episode. Thank you.